Welcome back to the Student Voice Podcast, guys. I'm Freshie. I'm one of the hosts. And today I have with me our first guest of the podcast, Allison and Salam, both from New Jersey. Allison, if you want to take a second to introduce yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Allison Cederbaum. As Freshie mentioned, I am from New Jersey. I am currently serving as the youth governor for the YMCA Youth and Government Program in New Jersey. That's probably my biggest women in politics experience, but I've done some other work as well. I serve as the treasurer for the youth branch of my local political party committee. I've done work on various political campaigns from federal, state, and local levels, and I've done some work with pushing some legislation forward in my state government.
Hey guys, my name is Salam Ambao. I am the former Secretary General of the YMCA Model United Nations. I also have the honor of serving as president of a county political organization at the moment, or youth chapter of a county political organization, I should say, as well as I've been able to do some work on some political campaigns as of late, as well as some work with voter registration and some advocacy work with some legislation that I have been passionate about. So it's my pleasure to be here. Super excited to be one of your first guests.
Yes, me as well. Forgot to mention that.
And I have had the absolute pleasure of working with both these young girls through a program called Youth in Government. I'm also a youth governor. I was a youth governor of Indiana for 2 years, and that's how I met both Allison and Salam. But today we have all gathered here today to talk about women in politics, being young females in the political sphere, especially during Gen Z, has been really an interesting, say, journey, it feels like. And to celebrate Women's Month, that is March, we really felt like it was important to have an episode like this, and especially bringing guests who have different perspectives outside of our host alone. And I think to just kind of kick off our conversation, we should really talk about what is the issue that we're still facing being women in politics. And I think that really comes down to a lack of representation and a lack of just women in political sphere in general. And I really feel this, especially coming from Indiana, is that there's not many people that I can look up to and say, I want to be like you when I grow up. That's just never been around. And I don't know if you guys have experienced that same predicament.
I think that as time's going on, we're seeing more representation that without a doubt is a trend that's happening. So that's really positive to see. But I definitely will say it's been definitely a dichotomy between the way we view ourselves in the political sphere, or at least I do personally. I can't speak on behalf of all women, of course, and those who identify as men do. Just with regards to seeing someone in front of you who you can work towards becoming. And I've always felt that going in your individual path is always very important, but still having that figure to look up to can be really revolutionary and can be what inspires you in the first place to go for something. I know personally for me within my youth and government program, it's been quite some time since there had been a female youth governor, and I won't credit myself in that position with any sort of gender revolution breaking the glass ceiling to any massive degree by any means. But it was certainly an interesting experience when I was thinking about whether or not I was going to run, and the timing of that, which conveniently lined up with Salam actually winning the position of Secretary General, which is sort of our sister program, and seeing that from a friend of mine, but then also seeing women in the broader political sphere, in the real world, real government, obviously very important as well, and seeing those kinds of figures definitely helped push me over the edge to run for something, and served to legitimize personally the goals that I wanted to achieve, and set aside those other issues with my identity and the way that I might be perceived by others.
Something that came to mind there is, like, for me personally, I've always like been a very headstrong person. Like, I set my mind to it, what I was gonna do, regardless of what I'd seen. But I think representation is most effective when it's not quite as conscious, like when you just see something and it's not something revolutionary, it's just like a subtle acknowledgement, like this is something I could do, and it's just something that people perceive as normal. So I think for like being able to see that, whether it be in the media, whether it be in politics, is something that's really big for young people, especially like speaking as a young person, you know, so that's something that's really big. And I remember actually, Allison, like mentioning the election for Secretary General after I had won and I had adjourned conference. One thing that I never really thought of myself as like a role model for other people in that sense. Like I ran for position because I had something I wanted to do. And it was just something that like I acknowledged, like maybe in like the back of my mind that wasn't something that I'd seen very often. My program director, she actually, after I stepped off, she's an African-American woman herself, I am as well. And after I'd called on one of our delegates, who was also an African-American woman, or a girl, I guess I should say, I think she's quite a bit younger than me. But she, after I came down to the podium, she was like, those are the people that you get to inspire with what you're doing right now. And I think that was one of the first times that I realized that, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, the people who are perhaps in Congress or perhaps the people who are, like, the big movie stars on the screens. It's, like, in the little things when you can see people can achieve those kinds of things, like, in a program that you're in or in your school, like, you can see that kind of representation in a space you want to see yourself in. If you're not, like, as headstrong from the get-go, like, if your parents maybe aren't drilling that into you and you see it in that other space, that's definitely a place where it can make a whole lot of difference.
Something that I think is really interesting that you brought up, Salam, kind of while we were talking pre-recording, is perspective and not only the lack of female role models that we have to look up to, but the lack of perspective that individuals have in their separate chambers. Now we're going to mainly focus on Congress during this conversation because that's just something that everybody can relate to. But we see this even in state legislatures where there's such a low amount of women in those positions or even in local positions that there's this lack of understanding of what it is to be a woman in America, or especially a woman of color in America, or an LGBTQ woman or female identifying person in America. It's very, very different. I thought this was really interesting to bring up, Salam, that in 2018, we hit a record number of 117 women were elected into Congress, but that's still out of 535 members of Congress. So can you talk a little bit about this perspective and why you think it's so essential that we're missing this piece in all of our politics?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to having a diversity of experience to pull from when you are creating legislation. Like the reason why people are elected into Congress are to create the laws and pass the legislation that best serves the American people and their particular constituents. So if you have a Congress that isn't as representative of the people that they are creating laws for, then there's some nuance that's lost when they pass that legislation. So in terms of like an experience, if you, like, let's say, for example, what happened in Texas with regard to not being prepared for that kind of weather, like here in like New Jersey, like we salt our roads, we like change up, like we're ready for that kind of weather. Like we understand that kind of experience. But because the people who were responsible for preparing that kind of weather in that state weren't ready for that kind of experience, we saw the consequences that arose out of that, among other factors, of course. So in those kinds of things, if you don't have people representing African-American voices, Asian-American voices, Pacific Islander voices, Native American voices, like Hispanic, Latinx voices, like if you don't have people representing LGBTQ voices, so on and so forth, you miss that aspect of their experience when you're creating the legislation that will govern their lives. So I think that's where the distinction lies. A lot of the issues that are perpetuated are often due to ignorance because the people creating the systems that result in these issues didn't understand that they were problems to begin with.
And Allison, do you want to talk about one really big example that I think all women can relate to, which is the pink tax?
Yeah, so definitely I will get into that. Just super quickly, I wanted to bounce off of something that Salam had said. So just bouncing off of her point, you know, the fundamental element of democracy is that you are representing the population. It should be approximately similar. Obviously, we're well aware that that's not the case, but just sort of wanted to point to that as one of the main features of what we're supposed to be seeing from a national legislative body is a somewhat proportional representation of the population of the United States. And that's not something that we're seeing. And one element of that also, and this will segue me into the pink tax, is that it's been shown that women politicians, I don't have the exact percentages in front of me, but women politicians tend to focus more on some other issues just because of the way they've been socialized throughout society. And that's a whole other issue we can discuss. But and then also just the perspective that they have as individuals and their own individualized experiences. So we see female politicians focusing more on things like social services, whereas there tends to be a little bit more of a focus on military and things like that for male politicians. And that's certainly something that we can see reflected in budgeting, even things like that. It's the people who are governing our lives and determining how the government works. So seeing the way that the values of the people and the way that the people want our government to function is not necessarily reflected just because of that lack of proportionality and the lack of attention to certain issues. So of course, one of those is the pink tax, which is essentially just a quick description is this phenomenon that women generally have higher costs of living just because of the ways that various elements of society, from public to private institutions to even just individuals and broader underlying subconscious beliefs about different products impact the way that we spend. So of course there are things like menstrual products that raise price of living for women, but even things like pink pens being charged more and marketed towards women versus black pens just being marketed towards the general population, there's an upcharge on those pink pens. So things like that can greatly impact women's lives and make it harder for them to live. We're seeing it reflected in poverty rates as well. So those are the kinds of issues that at least I believe in, and many studies sort of back this up with regards to how women focus on certain issues within the political sphere, is that these kinds of issues could be addressed better if there was that greater proportionality, as I said before. And there's a whole plethora of other issues that tie into that, but the pink tax in particular is something that has certainly impacted the lives of many women, and it's something that not a lot of people have actually heard about and learned about. So definitely glad to bring that up. Thank you, Freshie.
Yeah, and not to mention that we can't really talk about women in politics without addressing that there are different circumstances and different challenges that each woman faces based on her background, her ethnicity, her race. So to give you guys just some history or just some definitions, intersectionality, defined as Oxford Dictionary, as the interconnected nature of social categorisms such as race, class, and gender, regarded as creating overlapping and interdependent systems of discrimination and disadvantage. To put this in a little bit more easier to understand terms, the person who actually coined this phrase said, to describe how race, class, gender, and other individual characteristics intersect with one another and overlap. And I think the perfect person to talk about this would be Salam, seeing as that you are a woman of color here, and just being able to address this from a different stance that Allison and I can.
For sure, I can definitely hop in on this. I think with regard to intersectionality, I think nothing and no one exists within a vacuum, right? So you can't like separate one issue from another and the impacts that one action will have to the impact something will have on another person. So I think intersectionality is really key, because how one issue will affect one group will have additional repercussions on another group. And I think to say it's definitely important to uplift voices of individuals of those groups that are traditionally underrepresented, but I also think that it can sometimes be dangerous to kind of shut down the potential for conversation with people of like a variety of backgrounds, including members of groups that are traditionally represented. So if you don't have that kind of communication, sometimes it can come down to just like talking at one another rather than talking to one another. And it's only when you talk to one another, actually communicate and have a conversation, that change can be made, because otherwise one perspective is represented and someone might have questions or a different perspective. And if they're not allowed to engage and interact, then they can't really practice that empathy that's necessary to create a resolution to the issues that are being discussed. So I think intersectionality and how we approach issues is really important in terms of looking at the different perspectives, understanding that like how one group interpreted an event is not necessarily how another interpreted, and that the actual reality as one would define it is probably someplace in the middle is really important. But then as we look to the future and creating those solutions, the intersectional approach of taking in those different perspectives, including those who perhaps are more traditionally represented, just to make sure that everybody moving forward feels like they had an equal voice in the matter. So I think that's what's really critical in terms of achieving a future in which we don't really have it's impossible to eliminate it entirely, but we're a future where we don't have as many people in as many different groups feeling so underrepresented and unheard and feel like they have the opportunity to make a difference in their lives should they need to.
I agree with everything Salam just said. And I will say I'm coming at this from a different perspective. I am white, but definitely having these kinds of conversations and whether it be political or more personal or parts of other identities, those kinds of cooperative conversations are ultimately how we reach conclusions. The whole purpose of having such a large legislative body, and I know we keep on going back to Congress, but it's a great example, is that there is a wide variety of perspectives. We can have people from far left, far right, and of course I say that with some a grain of salt in level of partisanship and extremism that we do want reflected in our legislative bodies, but having that variety of perspectives come together is how we ultimately, again, I'm going to keep on going back to this idea of representing the actual population through governance is really vital. And it's definitely, even in just the way that we go about conversations outside of society, because although the general structure that we want to look towards is having the people reflected in the governmental bodies, it's often the other way around as well, because our governmental structures tend to set the tone for political conversation for their constituents. So having the opportunity for those empathetic conversations that can go both ways and that allow people to really hear each other's voices are vital in governance, but then also in the way that we go about conversations with one another. And that's something that we're sort of lacking, but that opens the door for more conversations about intersectionality and between people of varying races and ethnicities, religions, sexualities, et cetera. And of course, between those of different gender identities, it can be great to have those conversations as well.
One thing I wanted to like add on that, and that brought to mind with regard to like proportionality and representation in government, there is no way that a single representative will represent every aspect of all of their constituents. That's just not possible. But I think that not only is it important for each individual representative to practice empathy and want to understand the experiences of a diverse array of their constituents, but also having a diverse array of individuals within the actual legislative body. The reason why that in particular is important is because when you're actually making the laws, there's that voice right there, like giving that perspective, rather than maybe it's heard by that representative, but alongside a myriad of different voices, it can be really difficult sometimes to you know, take out what one piece from one and then another piece from another and create that holistic perspective without having one of those individuals who might perhaps carry that other perspective in the actual room making the legislation. So that's why both are really important. It's not to say that like having a Congress that is proportionally representative of the country would resolve all of the issues if those lawmakers don't actually listen to their constituents, because there are other issues beyond just issues of race or gender and so on that are representative of issues for American people, socioeconomic status just being one of them. So I think a combination of the two is really critical for creating legislation that helps the people and also making sure that the people feel like they're being represented and are actually being heard in the laws that are being passed.
Salam, before I move on to this next point of just kind of recognizing some of these women that broke glass ceilings, do you want to read that quote that you mentioned to me earlier?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For context, y'all, Freshie sent us some great videos, and one of them, there was a quote that actually stood out to me quite a bit. It was from Representative Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, I believe. She'd stated that there's this, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, but a unique blessing and occasional burden of being a first. So that it just struck a chord in terms of like, no one, and I think she mentioned a bit of this in the video as well, no one who is one of those firsts goes into it for the sole purpose of having that title. They go into it specifically with regard to lawmakers to make a difference for their community. They feel like they can be the ones to represent the voice of their people and are able to do so with the honor of serving them. So I think in that case, there is that unique blessing in that you might have a lot of eyes on you in terms of you could get something done because of you have attention on the issues that you care about, but that burden in being that you have those eyes on you. So you have people who are looking up to you when perhaps what you're just trying to do is do your job. So like for me personally, I'm actually the first African-American female secretary general for my program in its, I believe, around 50-year history or so. But I think for me, it was never about that. Like I said before, I in my mind, once I set my mind to it, like, this is the thing I'm going to do. And it was solely because there were things that I wanted to do. But in understanding, like I mentioned before, there was what my program director had said to me. She made it clear to me that even though that might not have been a responsibility that I had wanted, perhaps when I went for this particular role, that was one that was part of that role, if that makes sense. So it's not on the same level, obviously, as being a congresswoman by any means, but for the members of my program, I had this responsibility to uphold myself in this manner that would have been the same as I had with regard to carrying myself in a professional manner, making sure that I did my absolute best to represent the interests of those in my program. But beyond that, it was making sure that I created a space in which people who perhaps didn't have that same sense of, like, I'm going to do this no matter what, and understand that this is an opportunity for them to have a chance to do that.
So I think the point that Salam was making before about just that burden of being a first, having those eyes on you and setting the tone for how people after you will follow. And of course, in an electoral process, it's going to be even more more of a stressful experience, just because people largely are influenced by their own past experiences and what they've observed before. So having that burden is incredibly it adds a lot to the experience, but it also adds a lot to the stress of holding those positions and doing the work that one wants to do. So I think that can be particularly impactful for women, or of course, women of color as well. And just the way in which women are perceived, even when they aren't the first of any situation, because there does tend to be a whole set of double standards, especially in politics, that are directed towards individuals who, whether they be firsts or not, are holding these new positions. So that adds another level as well. I mean, we've all heard, or maybe we've all seen on Instagram, various posts about women who are more assertive being called bossy, or, you know, there's a whole list of other things like that.
Yes, I completely agree with you saying, like, keep going. I just wanted to, that was great.
thanks, Freshie. So just seeing all of those as well really impacts how you can set the tone when you are the first person in a position. Within my capacity as youth governor, I am not one of those, not one of the firsts, but in the, I believe it's 83-year history of youth in government, I am the fourth female youth governor, and the first one in a few years now. So seeing the way in which my leadership style is perceived by others, and I will say, the program does an amazing job of uplifting people with various backgrounds and identities. So I just wanted to of course emphasize and make that clear. That being said, just the way in general that female candidates are spoken about and can experience various forms of communication with others, it definitely varies. So having those kinds of interactions and observations throughout the process of just trying to do your job, I think it can definitely impact your experience in a position of leadership. Now, that's not to say that it's something that women should shy away from, or any minority should shy away from. It does make it harder to make that clear, right? We see so many less women running for office, and a lot of that is because of messaging that expresses, this is going to be more difficult for you. And I won't say that there's complete falsehood to that. That being said, there's also an amazing opportunity there, because the moment someone sees, whether it be a woman or a person of color or a woman of color, or someone of the LGBTQ community sees those people in these roles, those kinds of double standards start to melt, and it's a slow process. But by getting there, by making that first step, it can have a genuine impact on the people of the future who are going to go after those roles. So not that responsibility and burden should be on someone, but it really can make a difference.
Yeah. And to mention some of these people that have either been first or been a part of like a generation of first, because it does seem that there was this generation, whether you were the first woman to be in Congress or you were the first race that you represent to be in Congress, it was still this kind of generational change in the 2000s when these women did come in and they kind of took Capitol Hill by storm, which I just love saying that. That brings me so much joy. Some of these women that we want to emphasize on that they have not been portrayed by the media or even by their colleagues in Congress are not even war. These people are still dealing with these horrible things being said about them or just being portrayed in nasty ways. These women are Nancy Pelosi, AOC, and Ayanna Pressley. And I, for one, I remember seeing in 2018, looking at all these women, and I was amazed that they were all being elected to Congress. I was like, look at this new wave of women that are going to be able to represent me. Somebody that looks like me is up there and has shown that you can do this. Like, look to all the young girls that are in the United States and said, you dream and you dream big because you can do the same thing that I did. And yet whenever I then looked to my side where my own father was sitting, he was automatically talking about how Nancy Pelosi is ugly or AOC talks too much and she's ill-intelligent just because she worked at a bar, or Ayanna Pressley is ugly whenever she cut her hair. And it was just these horrible, degrading comments. And I was so shocked because here I am sitting right next to him, his own daughter, with wishes to maybe one day be just like them and be elected into Congress. And he's saying these horrible things about these women just by the way they look. No, he doesn't even focus on their past or all their accomplishments and their successes that have got them to this moment, because those deserve to be recognized. But no, people like my father and people in the media instead choose, because they don't agree with these people or because they don't agree with their policies, they automatically feel as though, since it's a woman, since it is somebody that they see as beneath them, that they can knock them down in ways that you would never knock down a male. And I would love to just hear your guys' opinions on that, especially just with the media and also your own experiences, seeing as we are all women in politics and we have all experienced this in some way.